Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, in this segment, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with Accountability Pays, Miss Pamela Stamba. How are you?
I am great. Thank you, Lee.
Well, Pamela, can you tell us a little bit about Accountability Pays? What are you doing for folks?
Sure. I'm the founder and president of Accountability Pays, and I created the company 30 years ago. And today, what I'm doing and have done for the better part of 17 of those years, or 18, is work with companies to help them assess talent. And then in particular, my sweet spot as a service provider is to work with high potentials or emerging leaders to help them get ready for their next areas of responsibility in an organization, get them clear what their path is. And then likewise, with either emerging leader teams or senior leader teams, do the team building exercise. And I have a tool that I like to use as the core feedback loop of my work. It's called the Harrison Assessment. So I'm a managing partner of the Harrison Assessments and one of 13 in the United States.
Did you help create that assessment, or what's your role in the company?
No, Dr. Harrison created the Harrison Assessment, and my role is to sell and deliver the value, and the value can be used for hiring or for onboarding, developing people, team building, executive, just everything having to do with developing succession planning or employee engagement, measuring and then creating an actionable conversation between a manager and an employee to help them, help the employee see what it is that they need to bring perhaps to what it is that they want from the organization. So let's say, for example, I'm someone who wants my opinion valued. Well, if I'm inclined to express warmth and empathy when I'm managing people, and if I'm collaborative when making decisions, those are things that I bring to my desire to have my opinions valued. If I don't express warmth and empathy, and if I'm not collaborative when I make decisions, then the chances that I'll have my opinions valued are lower.
Right.
And so I'm actually capable of having an impact on whether I have my opinions valued or not. That's an example of engagement and where it might go awry because somebody doesn't realize how responsible they are for getting their own needs met.
Now, when a company starts working with you in this regard, how does that work? Can you talk about like the initial kind of challenge they're having and why they choose you and how they kind of bring you on board to help them?
Well, if we're talking about high potentials, a lot of companies will have used a pretty commonly utilized tool called the 9 boxes, which is giving, on the one hand, at one axis of the 9 boxes, is saying how well does this person perform, and then the other axis is the opinion of the validity of the potential of that person for a future job. And so they've done that work, which is pretty good preliminary work, but it's still very opinion based. So it's putting some granularity around performance, but once somebody's on that list, now what? So there really isn't anything about the 9 boxes that says, here's the development actions that you should take. I recently had a conversation with someone that I'll be working with here shortly who said, you know, we identified a high potential and we looked again 2 years later and they hadn't changed a bit, right? None of their ability to be in a next position had been addressed satisfactorily.
And then that is, so, is that because of them themselves or the organization didn't kind of create a framework for them to excel?
Well, it could have been one, it could have been both, right? But if you're asking me how I get there, it's because of the frustration of the leadership to say, gosh, we put these people on a list. Maybe some will go outside and independently find help. But most organizations are making an attempt to provide leadership development, and those attempts can fail. And it's hard to find and identify a way to measure that someone has taken ground.
Right.
So I have a tool along with the Harrison Assessment. I have another tool that enables me to pull their direct reports and find out how effectively they're garnering discretionary effort and loyalty, and then pre-test and post-test with that. So I can literally say, here's the ground that's been taken.
Now, does this work? These assessments, do they work with millennials? Because I heard they're different than everybody else.
I don't think they're different from everybody else. Yes, look. Just like the baby boomers at one time were flower children and all sitting around and hate Ashbury, right? In San Francisco, smoking dope and clearly unlikely to take over anybody's leadership position anytime soon. I don't think millennials are different. They've got their own version of how they differentiate themselves and their way of going about things. They're more digitally astute. You need to give them the opportunity to take their Harrison assessment on a mobile device because they don't have a computer.
Right.
Right? So there are those differences. But when it comes to the results that a business needs to produce, I don't think they're any different from anybody else. They may dress differently. They may want to work independently. They may not want to be in the office and conform to the 8-to-5, but it doesn't mean that they don't have a desire to be effective and to perform.
Do you have any suggestions on how to how maybe HR can get the most out of them or help an organization get the most out of them?
Well, I don't think, honestly, I'm not sure I would call myself a millennial expert. I think part of it is allowing for the differences in the way business is going to be conducted in the future rather than resisting the trend, figure out how to use it. I do know that there are organizations who have successfully taken the mobile devices away from someone on their way in the door and say, you can pick it up on your way back out, right? That's a management style that in a particular kind of organization, they got away with that, right?
Right.
Those are the extremes. But no, I wouldn't call myself the expert to say, here's how you should work with millennials. But I do think they need to be measured by the same performance yardstick that makes a difference. I think where we fall apart is in not measuring what matters and in not managing what matters. And I think that's a systemic problem of organizational effectiveness that should be addressed, frankly. I mean, if there's a little resignation about dumb policies, well, maybe those dumb policies should be addressed.
But how do you do that? How do you decide what matters? How is that done as an organization?
Well, part of it can be assessed, but the rest of it is just let's look practical. So here's an old story. You may have heard it before, but I think it comes to mind, and I find it gets a good laugh of recognition when I say it. You may remember the woman who's newly married. She cuts off the butt end of the ham, sticks it in the pan, puts it in the oven. It's Thanksgiving. The new husband says, "What's with that?" And she said, "Well, that's the way my mother did it." So here comes Christmas, and mother's there for the Christmas holidays. And so the mother cuts off the butt end of the ham and puts it in the oven. And the new husband of the daughter says, what's with that? And she said, well, that's the way my mom did it. So here comes New Year's and there's grandma. And so the husband doesn't even wait. He says, hey, everybody around here cuts off the butt end of the ham. Why did you always cut off the butt end of the ham? And grandma says, because my pan was too small. So I think it's in challenging the assumptions.
And that's where the disconnect is, that they're just that's the way we've always done it and nobody asked why.
Right. And that I think millennials are a gift in that they force us to challenge the assumption.
Because there's,
right? I mean, if you,
they like to ask why a lot.
They ask why a lot, and they don't tolerate that kind they just don't assume that the rules that have always worked around here are the rules that would work for them.
Right. Now, how important is cultural fit to you in a well-oiled organization?
Well, I think it's extremely important. So one of the disconnects in a lot of businesses is that they, if you look around, is there a senior HR executive at the table, at the executive table? And too often not. And so a lot of human resources organizations are under budgeted, understaffed, and expected to fix the people problems. Well, people is who deliver results. And so unless you treat people as a core source of effectiveness, not just, like a human capital. Human capital is intended to be a kind term, but it really means these are the machine cogs that produce a result. People are inspired to do what they do because they have an experience of being involved in something greater than themselves. And unless the organization has a purpose and a reason to be that calls people forth, then you really keep treating people like cogs in a wheel. And millennials have no patience for that. Unless the organization is making a difference, unless it has a cause that they did, that's pulling forth the loyalty or the discretionary effort, there's clearly people who've been in those jobs have tolerated their resignation. And don't demand something better. But when I work with human resources, I say, first, you have to transform yourself. You have to come from a transformative place and then earn your way into the senior position by being interested in and knowing how to deal with the business issues. Where does the people component fit into the profitability of the organization? What's the contribution that's required, et cetera? The people is the biggest part of the organization, and it's treated very secondarily.
Now,
too often,
right now,
when you look at the glaring successes, you look at the Zappos, those are places where culture is first.
They don't just give it lip service.
Correct.
Now, what's a symptom for you? Like, are there kind of red flags that you see as that companies that are just giving it lip service that can kind of be a warning sign to potential employees?
I think employees should be interviewing for what matches their interests, what sparks their passion. So, one of the things about the Harrison assessment is that it's measuring someone's preferences, their tendencies on the suitability side. So somebody who's applying for a job should know whether the job that they're applying for is something that would feed their energy in a positive way or deplete their energy. You know, any job just to have a job isn't the appropriate response.
Right. Now, it sounds like to you, if HR doesn't have a seat at the table, then that's kind of a red flag that maybe this company isn't serious about their culture and their people. Do you have any?
That's true.
Do you have any suggestions for HR people that are in a company that they are not there, that they can kind of put together some information or an argument that says, "Hey, this is in the best interest of the company that HR plays a more active role."
The place I see the greatest disconnect with HR and then what needs to be corrected there is that the if you see a HR executive reporting to the CFO, then it's probably because the organization treats it as keep this company safe place. Right. In other words, the legal protection, the policies and procedures, that kind of thing.
Right.
But Dr. Peter Drucker said the ability to make good decisions regarding people represents one of the last reliable sources of competitive advantage, since very few organizations are very good at it. Right. So in my program, I'd like to be offering a lot more than I do or delivering more is turning HR into a transformative force. Is what does it take? What are the questions that should be being asked? What is it that's going to bring about the realization of people not as an asset, but as a part of something that makes a difference? What changes that trajectory? You know, because there is a trajectory and it's an automatic. And then those companies that do exceptionally well at being good about that are always lauded as the places, why wouldn't you want to work? Right.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want to work there? And so now we have healthy organization competitions and we have all that, but inside of an organization, you know, you may have a department or a division president who can get that kind of excellence generated, but it doesn't go uphill, right? The laws of nature, culture comes from the top and is brought and flows down through the organization. So for myself, if I'm not working with the senior team, I can generate something at a division or a department level, and at some point, it will. Become problematic for the organization if the organization doesn't also adopt what's possible. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but that's what I'm thinking about.
Right. Now, for you, what you mentioned Zappos as an example of an organization that kind of does it right. Are there any other organizations maybe you've helped transform that have gotten better results?
Well, you know, the places where I actually have a significant impact are smaller organizations where I actually do get to work extensively within the organization. I'm working right now with a company called, well, I don't know if I should even name them, but
don't name their name, but just talk about the organizationally what transformed.
Yeah. So I first got to work with the senior executive team, and I was I brought all three of the assessments I use to bear on helping them see where they were, right? The state they're currently in. And then we could identify the gap of what was needed and then help them as an executive team grow their trust for one another, get over their fear of conflict and bring it to an appropriate level. Talk about the commitment that they had first to the executive team, where they should be committed to the greater organization, not their individual department. And then talking about, you know, who holds whom accountable for what and how does that play out in the various places. Right now they're dealing with a Somebody's been smoking marijuana on the property, and people who should have done something about that know about it and didn't do something about it. So now they need to address it, right? And when you've got one person in the organization that allowed it in the first place, and you need to take that person on, that's the kind of human dynamic that's happening when you step over the policies. And then it grows in proportion and becomes a big deal. And so that's avoidance of accountability for the positive. And then, of course, how are their results? How does the customer think the results are? What's the P&L look like? Right? How are the handoffs around the cycle from the order comes in and then it's dealt with by Department A, and then the handoff occurs to Department B to pick it up? What shape is it in across that line, right? Mm-hmm. And then Department C needs to do something next. How fully informed is Department C to carry out what's needed for the customer? You can kind of see it's a system process. So I've participated in all levels of that, and there still are breakdowns. And at least we have principles that we can go back to and say, where was the breakdown? Oh, all right. I was more loyal to my department than I was to the larger organization represented by this executive team. Got it. Okay, good. So come back over here and realign to where your first priority should be, and then make sure that what's happening in your department is supporting that, right? So there's clarity. Where there's clarity, there is the opportunity for something to happen. Does that make sense? So now yeah. I coach the successor to the CEO, I coach the COO, I coach the CEO, I coach the executive team, and we're 2.5 years in, and they're a lot clearer and a lot more effective, and it's a very successful company economically.
Now, can you talk a little bit about your time with Vistage? Are you still active with them, or was that a period of time you worked as a CEO coach?
I was 5 years as a CEO coach with Vistage. I've not been participating in any way with Vistage for 7 years.
And
so I don't have any affiliate. And in that period of time, that company actually sold and is owned by somebody else. And there have been management changes, and I really don't keep track.
But in that case, you were kind of talking to just CEOs in general? About just general information?
In that period of time when I was at Vistage, I had a group of 12 CEOs that met on a monthly basis with me as their facilitator. And then I individually coached those CEOs. And in several cases, the key executives of those CEOs were also in an executive group that I facilitated.
So throughout your career, you've been dealing with the C-suite and as a trusted advisor in a variety of roles.
Correct.
And for you, what's the most rewarding part for you?
Oh, when somebody takes a stride in the direction that they want to go and can see themselves being successful in that realm. Right, whatever that is for them, and usually we have agreement that they're going toward a new position. So one of the things that happens that I love to take on happens to high potentials is that we develop as people. We develop in our professional lives. We develop compensating strategies for things that get us a result in the short term, but it isn't really who we are. It's not, you know, we're overcoming something that naturally is in our way. So let's use communication as an example. Okay. Maybe I'm an under-communicator, and so I tend not to say what's on my mind. And then every once in a while, that builds up. And all of that withheld communication comes pouring out in a not so graceful manner. But over time, I work and I realize, gee, that's not very effective. And I know I've been reprimanded often enough to know that I can't do that on the work site, right? So I learn how to count to 10, but I never learned how to actually appreciate the diplomacy that's required. I just compensate. And my core structure hasn't changed, but I put compensating strategies in place to get along. Well, as my span of responsibility increases, I really can't be as effective across a bigger responsibility unless I work in my DNA to get what it is that I'm at my core need to shift, so that I don't have to exhaust myself using these compensating strategies. I can actually get my being to shift, because we are talking about behavioral preferences. And if we see the impact of our poor choices or our compensating strategies, we're motivated now. And I can actually show those to someone who's a high potential and say, here's where you're, right here it is, four color. Here's where you're getting in your own way. Here's where you're getting exhausted. Here's why your enthusiasm for your own goals is impacted, is because, here's a pattern, for example, we call the Leadership Bermuda Triangle, where you are highly open and reflective of other people's ideas, but not very certain of your own. So you're not providing the kind of clarity required in your role for the people who work for you. And then when you go to create results through these people, you express warmth and empathy, but you don't really enjoy holding them to account for the tasks that are required. So you're reliant on relationship. And then when we get over here and we look at your relationship to helpful versus asserting your own wants and needs, you're really, really helpful, but you're not asserting your own wants and needs. And when the impact of that finally hits home, because you've been doing other people's work rather than holding them to account for it, you're exhausted and you don't know why. Here's why. And here's what you need to do about that, right? You need to provide more certainty, which provides more clarity. You need to hold people to account for the tasks and do that clearly. And then you need to assert what you need from them so that you aren't overperforming, right? Being a firefighter and coming in at the last minute and saving the day, it's a bad idea, because it destroys systems to have firefighters. Systems can't work effectively if you've got a lot of firefighting going on. It's a pretty good indication that you have a broken system.
And
so I can literally get to that level of granularity and then coach them toward those rebalancing of what they need to rebalance.
But at the heart of it, it's the name of your company, Accountability Pays. By having this type of accountability, you're going to get the results that you desire.
Correct.
Now, if
accountability does pay.
Well, that's the heart of your message, right? That's what this is all about.
I know.
So now for you, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way of getting a hold of you?
Yeah, so my website is accountabilitypays.com. My website specific to the Harrison Assessment is accountabilitypays.harrisonassessments, plural, harrisonassessments.com. And both of those are, you can go to one and get back to the other. But those are my touch points. I also have a LinkedIn profile. In fact, right now I'm looking at the blog I posted, Why High Potentials Matter, no kidding, about trust and the Edelman Trust Barometer and how important it is that high potentials earn the trust of the people, because right now it's as low a metric as we've ever seen.
Well, Pamela, this is Stone talking. It has been an absolute delight having you on the program this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Stone. Thank you.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest today with Accountability Pays, Miss Pamela Stambaugh, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.